Welcome to Nightlife, the podcast.
Well, I'm looking into all of your futures. I'm seeing a tall, dark, and handsome stranger. I guess the chances are that at least a few of you will be encountering a tall, dark, handsome stranger. So that's probably going to be correct for someone. Have you been to a psychic? Did they tell you something so accurate you were convinced they really did have the power to look into the future? Now, some of you will, of course, have the attitude that there's no such thing as a person with psychic powers and that they prey on the gullible and the vulnerable. And there are certainly those aspects to the psychic industry. Well, my guest tonight has been on a quest over the past couple of years to understand the attraction of psychics and to investigate some of the best and worst aspects of those who claim to be able to contact your dead relatives or predict your future. Tonight, he's going to share some of what he learnt on that journey. Gary Nunn is the author of The Psychic Tests. Hello, Gary. Welcome to Nightlife.
Good evening, Suzanne. Good to be here.
So what started you on this journey and got you so interested in psychics?
It was my sister, actually. She had always really been into psychics and mediums. And I'd kind of poked fun at her about it, and it had formed part of our banter. And it grew a lot darker when our dad died suddenly in 2015. And suddenly she started to seek out all of these mediums, and they claimed to be connecting her back to our dad. And at that point, and she was utterly convinced that that's what they were doing. And at that point, I stopped poking fun at her, and I grew concerned that they were suspending her and freeze framing her in that denial or bargaining stage of grief. So I was a bit intrigued at that point as to why people seek out mediums. And it seemed to me that her vulnerability was being exploited, as you mentioned just then. It felt like they were grief vultures, and her fragility was being exploited. And I thought, God, these are the people who are vulnerable and maybe gullible and naive. And I found out on the 2-year journey that I was completely wrong about that. I discovered that powerful people with influence and authority are often seeking out psychics in secret. So we're talking world leaders, chief execs, and even police murder investigators. And whether you believe in them or not, they are likely to have an impact on who will trust you, who will date you, who will hire you, and even who will fire you.
And you've met people who've done all of that. Now, there are some famous people who have relied on psychics to make business or other decisions. You document a few of them in the book. One of them is Christine Holgate, who most of us know as the former chief executive officer of Australia Post. Tell me the story about her.
Yeah, so she's someone that claimed to have a really good experience with a psychic, and she credits them with her success. And she's been going to business conferences and saying, if you want to really nail it at your job, hire a fortune teller, hire a psychic. And whether or not she's saying that with her tongue in her cheek, I don't actually know. But let me tell you the story. So before she was the head of Australia Post, as many people will know her for, she headed up the vitamin company Blackmores. And she was tasked with increasing Blackmore's sales of those vitamins in China. And in order to do that, the sales team had evidently said to Christine Holgate, what would really help is if you could meet the Chinese president. If you can meet him, then and even get your picture taken next to him, we could blow that up and we could put it around all the pharmacies around China. And that was their strategy. So she was, like many people who head up organizations, I think she was a bit overwhelmed by this juggernaut task. It felt impossible because the Chinese president is notoriously guarded and always has lots of minders around him and is pretty difficult to meet. Well, she goes to see a fortune teller and says, how on earth am I going to go and meet this Chinese president? And the psychic says to her, you must wear a piece of green. If you wear an item that's green, find your way into an event where he's going to be there and you'll meet him and you'll get that picture. So she manages to get an invite to the G20. Lots of very important people are there. And Alan Joyce is there as the CEO of Qantas. And Alan Joyce says to everyone, right, can I facilitate any introductions? Who do you want to meet? And there's a few different people saying, Alan Joyce wanted to meet Obama, and a few different people saying, I want to meet the French president. And Christine Holgate says to Alan Joyce, I want to meet the Chinese president. And they basically laughed in her face and said, there's no way you're going to meet the Chinese president. He's notoriously private and guarded with his security. So, and also to mention, you're not allowed to take your phone into the G20. They're strictly prohibited. So you have to go through security. So somehow she's wearing I've seen the picture. She's wearing a white dress and she's wearing a green necklace. And following the psychic's advice, she somehow manages to sneak her phone into this conference. So there's the first barrier down.
Yeah.
And then she goes up to Tony Abbott, who was there, and says to him, is there any way you can get me introduced to the Chinese president? And lo and behold, she manages to do it. And who took the picture? Mr. Alan Joyce. So she goes to business conferences now and tells this story. Now, I looked into the Blackmore's revenue in China. The year that this happened was 2014. And that year, Blackmore's revenue in China was $1 million. The year after the psychic had given her that advice, it had gone up 50-fold to $50 million. 2 years after, it went up to $500 million. So one piece of psychic advice worth $500 million.
Isn't that amazing? I mean, maybe it was the fact that a psychic believed that there was a way to do this that gave Christina Holgate the confidence to sneak her phone in and do all of these things. Isn't that amazing? But we've got high profile chief executives, people who are in the news all the time, who are going to psychics, which is amazing. Deborah Lee Furness, tell us what a psychic did for her.
This is another good story. They don't always work out this well, I have to tell you, Suzanne. Like some of them...
You've cherry-picked the good ones, hey?
I've started with some good news because it gets pretty dark. I'm sure we'll get onto that. But yes, Deborah Lee Furness, she had just graduated in America from drama school. She was in LA trying to make the dream happen, trying to live the dream. And it wasn't working out very well for her. She wasn't getting the roles that she wanted. And she was single and she wasn't getting the romantic interest that she wanted either. And like many people who are feeling a bit lost, she went to go and see a psychic. And this fortune teller said to her, you need to pack up your bags and move back to Australia. So she'd been in LA at this point for a little while and she wasn't getting any big breaks. And the psychic said, you'll get your big break and you'll meet a man. So this is Deborah's own words. She said she had nothing to lose. You know, she just, things weren't going too well for her. So based solely on that advice, she packs up all her bags, moves back over the other side of the world to Australia. Within weeks of getting back, she scores the lead role in the ABC crime drama Corelli. And on set, she meets a handsome young man who had just graduated from performing arts school, and his name is Hugh Jackman. And this year, they have been married for 25 years.
Oh, just amazing. Now, look, Gary, I've got my first SMS in from people telling me about their experiences. Good. Good friend of mine went to a psychic for a tarot reading. Everything was going fine until the psychic declared that my friend would soon be married. The psychic described this potential husband, and the only person my friend could think of was me. The psychic was adamant that we were going to get married. My friend said, that's not going to happen. She was asked why, to which my friend answered, because he's gayer than Christmas. And then the psychic's response was, well, people change. The friend was obviously quite unimpressed, and I'm pretty sure they're not married to this date. So, Gary, you know people, and these are people I think you knew anyway, aren't there, who literally hire or refuse to hire people based on their astrological chart?
Yes. My former manager. It really shocked me, Suzanne. I couldn't believe it. So I used to work at a major children's charity in the UK, and my manager there, Rachel, she confessed to me that she sometimes recruits into her team based on star sign fit, which obviously is controversial and very much against HR policy, I would imagine. But how would they know? Because people put their date of birth on their CV, so she calculates it from that. Now, just to represent her accurately here, she said to me that if she had two candidates of equal ability, qualifications and experience, and she couldn't pick, she would use star sign compatibility with the rest of the members of her team as the deciding factor. But I still found that absolutely incredible, that someone would hire into their team based on star sign fit. So it led me to say to her, would you have ever hired me if I wasn't a Libra? And as it transpires in the book, she tells me that she really doesn't vibe with late May Geminis. And she started to tell me how both Boris Johnson and Donald Trump were Geminis, and she feels that they're disorganized and sort of tend towards chaotic personality traits. It's really interesting, though. There's something called the Barnum effect, which comes into play here. It's called Barnum because it's named after Barnum, the greatest showman, who was the master of manipulation and had something for everyone. And the Barnum effect dictates that very well written, cleverly written personality descriptions can be phrased so that they're so ambiguous and vague, but they feel like they're just about you when you read them. They think that you think they've nailed you. And that comes into play in everything from especially star signs and horoscopes, but all the way through, I was reading up recently to things like Myers-Briggs tests, where they do these personality assessments. It's called the Barnum-Fora effect, where quite often when we're reading things that tend to describe ourselves, we just implant our own narrative onto that. And we feel like these ambiguously worded, vaguely worded personality descriptions just absolutely are talking just about us and nobody else.
Gary Nunn is with us, author of The Psychic Test. And Gary, I guess that what you were just saying really plays into something that you was a bit of a revelation to you, I guess, as you went through this process, that when you go to see a psychic, it is all about you, isn't it? It's kind of a counselling session. Someone's holding your hand, someone is looking in your eyes, and they are only thinking about you.
100%. It's a very powerful experience. When I went in, I would suspend my disbelief and just indulge this world of mysticism, and I would notice how I felt, and you know, I'd grow hotter, beads of sweat would form across my forehead, I'd get a bit giggly, the idea of a romantic future that was very promising and a career that was very diverse and enlivening was very seductive. And then they're talking to you about, they're stroking your ego, they're hearing your anxieties and your fears and everything to do with your future, and they're giving you this sense of reassurance. And let me say as well, Rachel, who hired by Star Sign Fit into her team, she wasn't the only person that did that, I have to say. The other person who I discovered who did that, his name was Glenn Rosewall, and he was the chairman of Australia's biggest stockbroking firm, BBY. He hired a psychic and paid her for 4 years from the firm's finances. Her name was Naveen Rottinger, and she advised him on where to invest his stocks and shares based on her psychic advice, but she also advised him on who to hire and even who to fire based on her psychic advice. So she'd say, right, the spirits are saying that Suzanne is not going to perform very well next month. Find a way of firing her. And that's what he did. it did not go very well. The stockbroking firm went bust, and it was the biggest stockbroking firm collapse since the global financial crisis. And the way we all found out was because Glenn was put on the dock for corporate mismanagement in the liquidators report, and Naveen was called as a witness, and that's when everything was revealed.
Wow, just incredible. Jennifer, I don't know if Jennifer's tongue-in-cheek or not, but she says, I can't find a good psychic. How do I find one? Well, you tell me, Gary, you saw, how many do you reckon you saw in the last couple of years?
Dozens. I saw psychics, mediums, astrologers. I saw people who call themselves medical intuitives. I'd go to the mind, body, spirit event. I went in both Sydney and London, which is just, it was at the International Conference Centre in Sydney, packed full of all of these mystics of various descriptions. So many. I remember getting a reading in Leicester Square in London, and it is the busiest square in London, and it was this tarot card reader called Merlin. And if you've ever been to Leicester Square, you'll know it's frenetic with buzz and activity and noise and colour and screens. You know, it's like London's Times Square. And all of that evaporated. The noise quietened. The screens no longer distracted my line of vision. Everything just tunnel visioned into Merlin's eyes. And it's quite hypnotic. And I was transfixed because even though I know there's a very, very strong likelihood this is not true, and he's not telling me about my future, just indulging the idea of possibility and potential is quite exciting, and something that you don't talk about much outside of these kind of interactions. So, yeah, I saw all sorts of different people, and it was just very powerful to be invited to envisage your future and think about your dreams and your ambitions, yeah, and have those nourished by people.
Gary, you must have had good and bad. I mean, what to your mind made a good psychic?
Oh, that's such a good question. So it depends on what you mean by a good psychic, right? Because often what people mean is like, is this true? Is there a good psychic out there that can see into the future or can connect me with my dead relatives like my dad? And we fixated on that one test, and we're not the only ones. So there's a group of people called the Australian Skeptics, and they, to this day, offer $100,000. So you can win $100,000 in Australia today if you can prove to them that you have psychic or paranormal abilities. And that's been on offer for 30 years, and nobody has passed that test. But it is one test. So when it comes to making a good psychic, I wanted to look at all the other tests. Are they empathetic? Can they help heal? Can they alleviate loneliness? Can they encourage lifelong romance? Can they harm? Can they delay the grieving process? And can they order the disorder with dazzling flair? And the answer to all those tests is yes. So if you want to know what makes a good psychic and who's a good one, well, I met many on this journey who were very empathetic and very charismatic, and as to whether or not they could see into the future, it almost didn't matter, and it certainly doesn't matter whether I believe, because for me what I discovered when I'd let go of my identity as a skeptic, because I'd always worn that so firmly, that cloak of skepticism, that it had made me be quite dismissive of my sister's penchant for psychics. When I took that cloak off and suspended my disbelief and kind of applied a bit of an agnostic approach to writing the book, suddenly all of these different stories started, like your callers are coming in with, all these different stories started to come through. And I allowed a cognitive dissonance to live within me so that I could explore more and find out the humanity that lies in this world, which we've ignored a little bit. Because if your starting point is this, I'm a complete skeptic and I don't believe in any of this, you just close down the conversation and we're not hearing each other. And I wanted to write a book that kind of – took us out from our echo chambers a little bit and unified believer and skeptic. So in the book, my sister is the voice of the believer and I'm the voice of the skeptic. And that's how we start when we go and see this ancient psychic called Iris. And then that's the very starting point. And then what I will say is that in the book, my sister and I step into each other's worlds and come into each other's worlds a little bit. And it brought us much closer as siblings. And it's also made me a bit more open-minded, not necessarily towards anything supernatural or paranormal, because I don't believe in that. That's not my worldview. It's made me more open-minded towards people who do have a different belief system than me. And it's made me stop being quite so condescending and supercilious and rude towards them. So I hear them more. And I think that makes them hear me more as well.
Here's another one. This is from JNWA. Psychic told me that I wasn't going to travel overseas with my long-term partner 2 weeks before we left Australia. 10 weeks later, I was a single lass in Scotland. Best thing ever. I met friends for life after we split, and more serendipitous moments happened for years that wouldn't have occurred if we'd stayed together. So, Jay, are you saying that you left the partner, or the partner broke up, or the psychic, because the psychic told you, or that the psychic just accurately predicted the breakup? Gary, did you have any spooky readings where you went, oh my goodness, how could you know that?
I heard about a lot of them, but did I have any? The answer is disappointing, I'm afraid. No, because I'm so aware of the trickery that's involved, which mentalists and magicians expose as trickery, and skeptics as well. I've got to tell you, the skeptics really don't like this book, the Australian skeptics. They think I've been way too soft on psychics. They've got their own magazine, which they sent me the review of, and they just eviscerated the book. But I was kind of pleased about it, because I thought, well, if they just said, brilliant book, we absolutely agree with everything Gary has said.
That would be very sceptical of them, would it?
Well, that's true, but I also would have failed in my intention, because it's not what I set out to do. Yeah. What I set out to do was to
Yeah, I think really create some nuance in the whole discussion about why people go to them, and you know, whether those people deserve to be flagged as being gullible. Now, Gary, you did have a friend who got what turned out to be a spookily accurate reading. Tell me what she was told and what then happened to her.
Oh, yeah, I think I know who you mean. So she, first of all, I have to tell you who she is, because of the credibility. So she is a news editor at a major global masthead. That's what I can say. So, and that's important, because for me, journalists, especially at that level that she's at, I had this perception that they are unflappable. They have very strong detectors for bullish and spin and lies, and my perception of journalists is that there's been so many people they've come across who've tried to lie to them and tried to spin that they can detect that very quickly. So that's important, I think, because when she then told me this story, it gave it an extra, it bestowed upon the story an extra level of gravitas and credence and believability. So she goes to see this psychic. She's Australian, but she was living in London at the time. And the psychic said to her three things. Someone close to you called Ken is going to get very ill. Then the next thing was you are going to go to Gothenburg. She'd never even heard of the city of Gothenburg, didn't know where it was. And then the third thing, you're going to have a near-death experience in India, and you are going to have problems with your right shoulder for the rest of your life. So she just thought he was a complete shonk, complete con man. Her and her friend were giggling, her friend being her flatmate that she lived with at the time. And 2 days later, her flatmate said, oh my God, I think I might have to go back home to Australia. My dad, Ken, has been taken to hospital, seriously ill. So they both were like, how weird. Anyway, then a few months after that, she gets invited to a wedding in Gothenburg. She was convinced that she was going to meet a man there. She thought, like, this is it. I'm going to meet the man of my dreams there. Well, she went to Gothenburg. She went to the wedding. And apparently there's this really fun part of the story where they were going around the pubs saying, you've got to meet our friend, she's going to meet the man of her dreams in Gothenburg because the psychic told her. Well, the psychic hadn't said that. The psychic had just said you're going to go to Gothenburg. So it's funny how we sort of transplant our own narratives.
Did she meet someone in Gothenburg that weekend?
She did meet someone, but it was a one-night stand. Oh. It wasn't the man of her dreams, she told me. I'm probably giving away way more than she'd be comfortable with. Look, good job I haven't told you her name. Anyway, and then so about a year later, she goes around the world on an around-the-world trip, and she actually told me that she forgot all about this psychic and all about the predictions, but she did carry around with her in her backpack the notes that she'd taken, because she'd taken notes from the reading. And she goes to India. She, in a freak accident, she fell on the train tracks, and she had to narrow her body because the train was coming into the station. She had to narrow her body, and the train went over her, and she thought she was going to die. And when she was helped up from the platform, they discovered that she had broken her right shoulder, and she pulled out the note that she'd kept, and she'd put an R with a circle, reminding herself that the psychic had predicted that she would break her right shoulder. Now, the most remarkable part of this story was, because we were having a few wines when she told me, and I was gripped. It was me and my friend, and we were both gripped. It doesn't matter whether you're a believer or a skeptic. When people tell you these stories, they only ever tell you the bits that come true, because it's really boring. When someone tells you the bits that didn't come true, it's like when someone tells you about their dreams. You know, you're like, it's boring, didn't happen. So we just sort of zone in on the things that did happen and are really exciting. And the most remarkable part of the story is she's like still a complete skeptic. She wow. just does not believe.
Not even a little inkling of doubt?
Well, I said to her, like, as somewhat, we're curious people as journalists, right? So yeah. I was sort of saying to her, does that not spark your curiosity? Like, what? Why? What? She said, I just think he's a guy who got lucky. And I'm like, they're very specific predictions, you know. And no, she just thinks, no, it doesn't fit in with my worldview. I cannot believe it. So, yeah, take from that what you will. I mean, I don't know. It's funny because you can take your reading, a psychic reading, to the Australian skeptics, and they will take it apart for you and tell you the parts of it that could be trickery and the kind of techniques that could be involved. So if I was to take that reading to them, they probably would analyze it and show all of the different things that have made it feel like it's spookily uncanny.
Wow. All right, I'm going to tell you a story now, Gary. Me and a friend of mine, we went to a town not far from Tamworth because we knew about a psychic there called the White Dove. We didn't even know where she lived. We literally turned up at the service station and said to the sort of teenage boy who thought we were bonkers, where does the White Dove live? Anyway, he sent us to a street. We kind of walked up and down it until we found a house that looked like perhaps a psychic lived there. We knocked on the door and it immediately was, oh, the kettle's on, come in. Not even, hello, who are you? Anyway, we went in and, you know, the woman, it was a two-person team, the woman would sort of get in touch with your dead relative and sort of nod and write down incoherent notes, which she would then decipher for you. And then halfway through this, her husband, the chief, would come and he'd just look at you and he'd just make a couple of comments. So he came up to my friend and he looked at her and he said, this is going to sound really strange, but did you give someone the finger last week that you weren't meant to? And she was gobsmacked because just the week before at work, her boss had been annoying her and she had looked at him and, you know, flipped the bird at him and had then been completely horrified that she had done such a thing. And I think she apologized profusely to him and just couldn't believe that she actually did that in the workplace. But we just, how on earth could you get that? I mean, I'm not saying I believe it, but don't you think that's pretty kooky?
It is. It is, but did he say a bunch of other things that you've forgotten? You know, or the psychic, like were a bunch of other things said that just didn't ring bells and ring true that you don't.
Well,
you
all the things that the woman said to both of us, we both thought there was nothing really much in them. But then he came to me and said, "Oh, you've got problems with your right foot," and I knew I wasn't limping, but I've had long term problems with my right foot. So I went, "Oh, that's." But just him, he literally came in, said about one or two things to us, and then left. So we all just thought he had something going on. Anyway, we remain skeptical. Nevertheless, we just chalk that up to one of those strange experiences. Now, I do want to talk. I mean, we've sort of talked and, you know, I've got a couple of people on the SMS sort of saying, look, how can you be promoting this industry full of shonks? And your book isn't all about that at all. It's about actually, it's a very nuanced view of why people go and what it's all about. But there are people who clearly are shonks. Tell me about Maria Duval.
Yeah, this is in no way a promotion of psychics. Like the whole point of the book is to explore all angles, and absolutely, if you were to read the book, you'd see that that this is in no way a promotion of psychics, especially because of stories like Maria Duval. Maria Duval was a psychic in a small town in the south of France, and a direct marketing company got to hear about her and partnered with her. And they wrote, what they did was they wrote out some direct mail letters that looked like they were from Maria, but they wrote the letters, and it would have a picture of Maria at the bottom and her signature. What they did was they purchased what they called the suckers list, and the suckers list were people who lived on their own or had dementia, or people that they presumed to be quite lonely and vulnerable. Really, really sinister. And they were the people who received these letters. And in the letters, people could ask Maria what would happen in their futures, what was going to happen to them. And each time they corresponded with Maria, they were charged. And some of them got really hooked on it and were asking her all sorts of questions back and forth. It was the longest running mail fraud ever. And it is one of the biggest scams in human history because it extorted $200 million from Americans alone. As to the actual figure, well, it was all around the world, so we don't know, but it was considerably more than that. And this is the thing that really shocks me. It defrauded 60 times more people than the infamous Ponzi scheme. And I'd never even heard of it before. I don't know if you had, Suzanne.
No, I hadn't, not until I read your book.
Wow. Yeah. So these kind of acts of fraud, there's a real darkness to the world. You know, I uncovered stories of psychics purporting to be able to find missing bodies that have remained missing. And
well, in fact, I was reminded, Gary, you know, growing up in Adelaide, every so often a psychic would say that they knew where the Beaumont children were buried. And I understand that there are at least two times on which the police carried out digs based on a psychic who was obviously giving the parents of these children who'd been missing for decades, possibly, you know, false hope that they'd finally get an answer to what was going on.
Isn't it extraordinary that public money is expended via police time on pseudoscience, on these people who, you know, they are unproven. And I did a Freedom of Information request on the New South Wales Police, and I discovered that between the years of 2003 and 2019, psychics have been used by the police force at least 19 times and possibly considerably more. I also found out that they've sometimes paid the expenses of a psychic who's come onto a case. But bodies remain missing, and our biggest stockbroking firm has collapsed, and psychics are at the centre of all of this. So, yeah, this is in no way an endorsement or promotion of psychics. As you can see, I wanted to expose both the... What I wanted to do was expose both the darkness and the harm, and also the potential value in humanity in this world, and then let everyone make their own minds up.
Yeah, there's a couple of SMSs that I've received that I think really play into something that you explore in the book, which is that psychics actually have a great responsibility, because oftentimes it is heartbroken, vulnerable people who are coming to them, particularly when you've got mediums who are claiming to get in contact with the dead. Just tell us about Sylvia Brown and what happened, you know, what she did to the mother of a missing child.
After I reported about Sylvia Brown, after I wrote about her, I felt like I needed to take about 7 showers. It was really sinister. So, Sylvia Brown was hired by the Montel Williams Show in America to advise the parents of missing children where their children were and whether they were alive or dead. So, you watch this show where the absolutely grief-stricken, desperate parent of a missing child comes down the stairs and says, what's happened to my kid? So the one that really stuck with me was the mother of Amanda Berry. Amanda Berry is a teenager who had gone missing, and her mum says, what's happened to Amanda? And Sylvia Brown says, she's gone, honey. She's gone. She's not the kind of girl who wouldn't have called you. You'll see her on the other side. So Amanda Berry's mum, at that point, Amanda Berry had been missing for a year and a half. And Amanda Berry's mum absolutely believed in that. And she gave an interview afterwards saying, look, I don't want to believe it's true, but I do. The police have turned up no leads. The media have turned up no leads. I believe her. She that went home that week and packed away Amanda's room. That was from that point on. That was when she stopped buying Amanda birthday presents and Christmas presents. And not long after that, she started to experience ill health and she ended up dying of a heart attack. Now, Amanda was never dead. Sylvia Brown was completely wrong. Amanda was alive the whole time, is still alive. Amanda had been kidnapped by Ariel Castro and held captive in his basement for 10 years.
Oh my gosh, I remember when she came out of there with those other girls and just the shock of everybody finding out that she was alive. But I bet she would have wanted her mum at that point.
Yeah, yeah. You can hear the voicemail she leaves the police when she manages to escape saying, I'm alive, I'm here. And you can imagine, I mean, she was only a teenager when she was kidnapped. So you can imagine the first thing she wanted to know is where's her mum? And her mum had died of a broken heart after being given phony grief by a psychic. And yet psychics, police are still paying for psychics to advise them on this stuff, where missing people are. So it struck me as bizarre. We're living in a world where misinformation and pseudoscience and conspiracy are more dangerous than ever before. They are deadly.
Yeah, and here's the SMS that really sort of, this really hits home. Jen from Jen, who says, I knew a single mother years ago whose son in his early teens had accidentally or deliberately hung himself. She went to a psychic looking for peace. The psychic told her she could hear her son crying and screaming. And Jen obviously says that stayed with that person for years. And just think, is that responsible? You know, even if this psychic thinks that's what's happening, it just seems a terrible abuse of power to say something like that to someone. But then I'll counteract that, Gary, with another one that I had in. He says, some weeks after my partner took his life, I felt a need to see a psychic. I made an appointment. She said there was someone jumping around excitedly who was waiting for me because he wanted to tell me it wasn't my fault. And, you know, Lois says this comforted her so much over the years. So there's two sides of vulnerable people going to see psychics and having perhaps their whole lives influenced by what that person says.
Here's the thing. It's an unregulated industry, right? So it's a Wild West industry. There's no, unlike trained accredited psychologists who are bound by a code of practice, psychics can say what they want. They can foretell really bad things that are going to happen to you in the future, and they can predict good things. And that story that you just read out about her son had committed suicide and the screams that she could hear, it just gives me the chills. I mean, it really does. I do think a lot of mediums and psychics believe in themselves. So that was one of the things I wanted to discover. And the general consensus, even amongst the Australian skeptics who like to sort of debunk some of the grand claims that psychics make, even they say a lot of psychics probably do believe in themselves. And here's the thing I come back to. I always think delusion is more forgivable than deceit, because there are some like Sylvia Brown who absolutely didn't believe in herself. She's on the record as saying so. She got called out. And they are deliberate charlatans who are scamming people who are very vulnerable and are taking money from them. But there is value in this world. And for those that do believe in themselves, I think that they just think that they are telling the truth as they hear it or see it, as they believe. But it's this is the thing. It's never been proven, has it? So it's never, ever been proven. But then neither has God. And, you know, there are people. What do we do with people of faith? Well, we treat them with a lot of respect, and we give a certain amount of gravitas to the supernatural miracles that they believe in, that a virgin can give birth, that there is a God, a deity in the sky that can listen to your prayers and grant wishes. And what do we do with those? Well, for a long time in Britain, in the House of Lords, we gave them seats. In Australia, we give them tax breaks to run huge influential organizations, and we give them a say over public policy. And yet the psychics and their believers who also believe in supernatural miracles, we don't even want to talk about them on the ABC. Some callers are saying, you know, don't even want to listen to them, don't even want to, you know, we deride them and we mock them and we roundly condemn them. In my mind, there is no difference between the supernatural miracles that someone of faith believes in and the supernatural miracles that someone who has psychic beliefs believes in.
Gary Nunn is with me on Nightlife. I should just say, I know a couple of those stories would have maybe been a bit disturbing. 131114 is the Lifeline number. Now, Gary, I do want to turn to tarot cards. Firstly, before I come back to you, because everyone, Gary's going to give me a quick tarot reading on air. But let me go to Lorraine first. Hello, Lorraine. How are you doing?
Oh, yes, I'm good, thank you. And you?
Good. Now, you've been to a tarot reader.
Yes, I have. Actually, I've been to probably about six different tarot card ladies, psychics, and over the years. Not all are spot on, but this lady that I've been to see is just spot on. With everything she said, and I've still got other things to come, but she said that I was not getting on well with somebody who's close to me, who is a Pisces, and this Pisces person, a relative, we were just having so many arguments, and it was just upsetting me so much, the fact we were arguing, and I couldn't believe how spot on this lady was. She said that I was going to receive a small amount of money, which I did, was $150. She's also predicted that I'm going to get two reasonable large sums of money, which, I'm waiting for.
So what are you looking forward to the most? I guess the large sums of money sound pretty good, but you've got faith that these things are going to come true.
Yes, I have. Well, she was spot on with the arguments I was having with this Pisces person. All these. I'm just trying to think of the other things. Mm-hmm. They've all just come true, and I made sure that when I go to any of these, I make sure that I never tell them anything about myself, my life, so that...
You make them do the hard work. Thank you very much for your call, Lorraine. Now, Gary, you actually took up tarot just because, well, as part of your journey, and you discovered it was fairly easy to actually just go and do a course in tarot. So before you give me the tarot reading, you probably want to give everyone a disclaimer that you're actually not claiming that you can see into my future.
No, I'm not. No, I am the skeptical tarot card reader. So it's my niche. So I decided if you can't beat them, join them. And I went to this tarot reading class. And it's kind of a lot of it's about getting in touch with your own intuition, which I think that's a very human gift, your intuition and listening to your gut and storytelling and imagination. I think they're all very human gifts. I think they are gifted people, but I think they have the human gift of hyper intuition and hyper perception. And I thought, well, that sounds fun. So when I give a tarot reading, which I've done to quite a few of my friends, I say to them the same thing I'll say to you now, Suzanne, which is, I don't believe I have any supernatural paranormal gift. What I do believe is that I've studied the tarot, which goes back to 13th century Italy and also Egypt when it started. I think it's a very fun tool to promote deeper conversations and to get a bit intimate and to explore your future. Well, I do a 3-card reading from the Major Arcana. So it's your past, your present and your future, and just to have a bit of fun with it. So whether you believe or not is none of my business.
It's probably going to depend on what you tell me, Gary.
If you do believe, don't make any major life decisions on the basis of the reading. That's what I would say.
Okay. All right. Now, so we don't run out of time, we better do this. So what, you're going to run your hands over the cards and give me a sort of window in time in which I'm going to say stop?
That's right, yes. Yeah. So you just listen out and you'll hear them flick through the microphone and I'll flick backwards and forwards until you say stop and we'll do it 3 times. So here's the first.
Stop.
Okay, that's one. And I've put that down. Should we do all 3 and then we'll pick
yes,
them
let's,
and then
let's
we'll
do that.
Okay. Here's number 2.
Stop.
Okay. And here is number 3.
Stop.
Oh, there we go. Okay.
Oh, no, just tell right. me I didn't get the tower. The tower's the bad card, everybody.
The tower is a bad card. I'm hoping that you didn't, but if you do, we'll talk around it.
That'll be awkward,
won't it? It'll be really awkward. I thought about taking it out of the pack, but my friend told me it was cheating. So I'm reading left to right. So we're starting with the left, which is your past. Okay, your past is the High Priestess. It's number 2 in the pack. There's 23 in the pack. Number 2 suggests that you, when you started out in life, you were relatively sort of green and naive and young. You know, some people are almost born with this inner wisdom. You didn't necessarily have that in your past. You had a lot to learn, and what I can see on the card is a picture of a woman. She is wearing a beautiful gown which is celestial, covered in stars, looking up, and then there's a moon in the sky, and what this card says to me is optimism, looking forward to the future, having high ambitions, having really. So although you didn't necessarily have that kind of innate worldliness yet, you had big ambitions. And
I wanted to be the next Yarn Event. That's what I wanted.
Oh, there you go.
Did that work? Okay.
Let's talk about your presence. Okay. Let's go on to the next card. Okay. Oh, interesting. So this card is called the Justice card, and it is card number 9. So you've come forward in your journey. Some people in the 23 cards that are in the Major Arcana, some people will just go through all 23 in their life at once, and others will go through from 0 to 22 a myriad of times, you know, 100,000 times. So everyone's a bit different. So this suggests that you've crawled your way progressively forward to justice, which is good. What I can see on the card is a woman that's blindfolded, but she is holding, much like the Libra star sign, she's sort of balancing out 2 orbs of light, and then there are the scales of justice there. Now this card suggests that you are currently interested in fairness and equality. Not that you've never been interested in them, but it suggests that because justice is blind, because she's blindfolded, you're interested in moving. I'm trying to sense this now. You're interested in, previously when you had the High Priestess, you had all of these big dreams and ambitions, and what you're realizing is the world isn't fair. There is injustice in the world, and you want to now rectify that and find your rightful place in it.
Gary, could this be that I had to give up the option to do jury duty to actually be hosting the show this week, and I actually really wanted to do jury duty, so I'm in search of my opportunity?
I mean, is that true?
Yes.
Well, that's interesting that card's come up, I would say.
It is, isn't it?
Okay. Well, let's look what's in your...
This is the good bit.
What's in your future?
Now, apparently if I've got cups, I've got a baby, so I don't think you've got cups.
No.
Good.
This is a good card for your future. It's number 10. So it suggests that you're going to move forward. It suggests, actually, that you're not going to move forward too much further forward from where you are. It suggests at the moment you're in quite a content place. You feel quite good with your life. So I don't know you, Suzanne. I don't know how true that is. But what your card for your future, the Wheel of Fortune, what I see on the card is a wheel with all of the different astrological signs going around it. There's a full moon outside and a couple of planets, and it's sort of nighttime. Now, this is a good card for your future, because what it suggests is wherever you are in your life right now, whether you are content or whether there is some areas of discontentment or grievances, things are going to swing back round. It's a pendulum, and the pendulum always swings back round. So even if things are good, there'll be a time when they'll be good again, and you might have to go through bad times. If things are bad, you're going to swing back round to good. It's a really good card because it suggests that it's a wheel of fortune, right? Not misfortune. So it suggests that in your future, you're going to take with you the ambition that you felt when you were young. And now you've shaken off that naivety and you've become aware of the fact that there's justice and injustice in the world and justice can be blind. You're going to take forward that ambition, that sense of justice and the realities around how hard it is to achieve equality and fairness. And you're going to make them work together in your wheel of fortune. So that's your reading.
Okay, Gary. I think that's good. And obviously I'm not going to be holding you accountable. Well, actually, I mean, you said good stuff. So I guess I can only thank you if all of that more or less happens.
I mean, the fact that you were going to do jury duty and that's in your present, that's really interesting. Yeah.
Maybe you do have a power there, Gary. Hey, look, Gary, we are nearly out of time. So I just really want to thank you for coming on the show tonight and for giving me a tarot reading. Gary is the author of The Psychic Test. And look, for people, it's a little bit of a divisive topic, but the book is really nuanced. And I really had my eyes opened, actually, to the role that it plays in a lot of people's lives, as a great source of comfort and healing. So thank you for taking us on that journey in your book.
Absolute pleasure. Good to talk to you.
You too, Gary. That is Gary Nunn. His book is called The Psychic Test.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.